This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. By now, most of us know the story. Democrats in Kansas and Missouri suffered enormous losses in this year's elections. In fact, the losses were so devastating that some Democratic leaders in the two states wonder about the party's ability to field competitive challengers in 2022 when Kansas Senator Jerry Moran and Missouri Senator Roy Blunt are expected to seek new six-year terms. In the state houses, Republicans will maintain their supermajorities, which means fresh headaches for Democratic Governor Laura Kelly in Kansas. Joining us now to give us their outlooks are the leaders of the Kansas and Missouri Democratic parties. They are Jean Peters Baker is chair of the Missouri Democratic Party. She also happens to be the Jackson County prosecutor. Jean, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
Vicki Hyatt's also with us. She's chair of the Kansas Democratic Party. Vicki, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Vicki, just how tough was 2020 when it comes to the fate of your party there in Kansas?
Well, 2020 was unprecedented in the challenges and the circumstances that we faced. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic changed some of our strategies in how we reached out to voters. And I think that may have been one of our biggest factors. But otherwise, we did quite well recruiting some really excellent candidates and had some pretty good races, just came a little short, especially in the state legislature.
Jean, how about you in Missouri? How tough was 2020?
You know, it was disappointing. No one in Missouri would describe, if you're a Democrat, would describe it as a good year. But we did have some hopeful moments throughout the election cycle, and some of those, of course, came during the primary season, you know, when Medicaid expansion passed also in the same state of Missouri. So when you tickle this out, Steve, you'll explain it to the rest of us.
Did you see this coming, Jean?
Not the gaps of what we saw. So there was not a single poll that got this even close to right. So, and that's not just true for Missouri. It was true for the whole country. So I think what we'd have to say is that this was another Donald Trump election, you know, where polls just don't hit it right. And we're all a little confounded about how they could be so off.
You know, Jean, on election night, there was the big race in Missouri for governor with Nicole Galloway, the Democrat, going against Governor Mike Parson, the Republican. Did you think you had a shot going in, or did you know at that point the race was probably over?
I felt the tightening that occurred over probably the last eight or nine days before the actual election day. With early voting, it was really hard to really make that assessment, and the pandemic added another layer of it being difficult. So I was unsure, but I was still hopeful. And the outcome just did not merit what I saw, what I felt, and what I heard from voters. And that, that's really confounding, because Nicole Galloway is a really solid human being. She is... she's just a great public servant. So that particular race does not, has just left me a bit confused, a bit befuddled, because she is such a strong public servant.
And yet she lost by 16 points.
That's right. That's right. It is the gap by which she lost that is really confusing. So I think what it says is that Republicans came out in mass this election. Now, I think Democrats also were very motivated to come out and vote. But, you know, when there is a presidential election, everybody, you know, votes in higher numbers. But certainly when Donald Trump is on the ballot, it brings out a different kind of voter.
Vicki Hyatt, let me come to you back over in Kansas here. On election night, obviously, Barbara Beaulieu was on the ballot, the Democrat running for the U.S. Senate, the open seat there against Roger Marshall. Her campaign was saying in the days and weeks leading up that the race was too close to call. It didn't turn out that way. Marshall wound up winning by 12 points. But on election night, did you think she had a shot?
Oh, yeah, we were still very hopeful. And of course, the early returns looked extremely good. A lot of the, of course, that was the primarily the mail-in ballots. So we were hopeful, and then things turned. So it was a huge disappointment because she was such a strong candidate. But I think, as Jean said, the turnout for Trump was just much greater than we anticipated.
Did the polls get it right in Kansas? Did you have any indication of what the outcome was going to look like?
No, the polls were, we were seeing things that certainly gave us a much stronger chance than what the results were. So again, I think, and I think there may be what we understood, the low, what they call the low propensity voters on the Trump side turned out. And I don't think the polling accounted for those voters.
What was the first sign you got that that Beaulieu was in trouble? Was it literally the numbers coming in on election night, Vicky, or how did you see that?
It really was election night that we started to see the problems. We were hopeful for another congressional district and had some indication earlier that that wasn't going to go our way. But it really was election night that we learned that Barbara Beaulieu wasn't going to fare as well as we were hopeful for.
Vicki, you just heard Jean Peters Baker say this was another Donald Trump election. Pollsters talking about that the fact that Donald Trump was on the ballot made accurate polling more difficult. Did you see it that way too? And if so, what explains that? Why does Trump's presence on the ballot complicate things for voters?
I wish I knew entirely, but I think it was a huge factor. But there's just a draw to him. Those who really follow him are strong. And I know even when we were getting, we would send out mailers and we would get a lot of mail back because we were trying to reach across the line. And people would send us notes back that they were very strong Trump. So I don't know. Those who follow him seem to be very committed, and it was harder to make any persuasions, because we did try to do a lot of persuasion to get voters to change over, but it just didn't happen that way, so.
Vicky, I'm wondering, Donald Trump's hold on a good portion of the electorate, have you ever seen anything like it before?
Not, nope, I haven't. I haven't. So I don't know what his I don't know. I the it, he's We've just come to be a country of very split ideals, and he knows how to feed into the ideals of the other side.
Now, Jean Peters Baker, again, back on the Missouri side, you wonder what this says about your party's ability to bounce back in 2022. Again, you've got a competitive race or a potentially competitive race for the U.S. Senate in Missouri. What does it look like today? You there, Jean? Vicky, why don't you take that on the Kansas side for me?
I've lost you, Steve. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Jean. Are you there? Okay, Vicky, let me come back to you on the Kansas side. What are the prospects that you can mount a competitive race for the U.S. Senate on that side of the state line?
A few days after the election, I was really concerned that it would be hard to recruit good candidates. But since that time, and I've done a lot of talking to a lot of people and party leaders, I don't think it's going to, I think we'll see, we'll do fine. Jerry Moran will be a little tougher, but he will have a specific record that I think that we'll be able to go after. Certainly, we want to see how things play out with the COVID-19. And he still seems to be a Trump man. We'll just see how that all plays out. But I'm pretty confident. We've still got a lot of enthusiasm in Kansas. The Democrats, those who ran for office, some of them are feeling a little, we're feeling a little down, but I'm getting feedback that they're kind of ready to go again.
Well, Vicky, you got to beat somebody with somebody. Who would that be? Who do you beat Jerry
Oh,
Moran with?
I'm not going to speculate that at this point. We're still early in the game, but I know we'll probably start seeing some people step forward. within the next the first few months of next year.
Jean, what about you on the Missouri side, and what do the results this year say about your party's ability to bounce back in 2022 when Republican Roy Blunt's back on the ballot again?
Yeah, I think it's we do have a long road ahead of us. But let me tell you a couple of things that give me some hope. One is I have received a number of calls of people who are interested in running for party chair, running for other officer positions, in spite of the last couple of election cycles. So I'm always amazed at the quality of individual that will step up and take these kinds of volunteer roles, but also the candidates that will step up and will run for office, and they will be strong individuals. While we don't know who those are going to be yet, I'm always rather amazed that how our system of government works and how really fine people are going to come forward and put their name in for this.
Well, as I just said to Vicky, you got to beat somebody with somebody. Nicole Galloway arguably lost by enough this year that having her run again in 2022 might be a stretch. Jason Kander, who lost a close race to Roy Blunt 5 years ago, he's saying he's not going to do it. You don't have any other statewide Democratic officials here, so where do you go?
Yeah. So in Missouri, we have worked on building a bench. So that's one of the things that we really focused on during this election cycle. It's not something that the world really focuses on. Our people that are engaged in politics really focus on, but we have been looking at the local level from school boards on up in order to build that bench. So that's what we started doing during my cycle as chair, and it's what we will continue to do into the next cycle. But for us, this is not just a two-year election cycle in Missouri. We need to look at it for multiple years to come, and that is the kind of bench that we need to keep building, is from that local level on up, and that's how it works.
Explain to me, how does that work? How do you build a bench from the local level on up? What does that mean?
Oh, it's recruitment. It's recruitment for all of those local and municipal elections across the entire state. Some of those are nonpartisan, by the way. And so we still look for really good, solid people who are willing to step into those roles, do that kind of work, do it well, and then give them the training and the support that they need to continue to advance through the political process. So that's what we have started in Missouri, with a really dedicated campaign to find people to run in every one of those seats in every county in Missouri.
Is it fair to say, Jean, that Roy Blunt may not receive a seriously competitive challenge in 2022? Is that the bottom line?
No. No, look, I can see why people might think that today, but here's what I would just tell those listeners who want to see a strong Democratic Party, a two-party system in the state of Missouri, have faith. There will be someone, if we don't know who that name is right at this moment, do not despair. Somebody, and probably a series of somebodies, are going to step up into that role. They're going to want to do that job. They're going to do it well, and they're going to give Roy Blunt or whoever that person is quite a challenge in 2022. I have complete faith in that because I've seen it continue to happen. It will happen again.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the futures of the Missouri and Kansas Democratic parties in the wake of very tough election outcomes in 2020. If you want to run for the U.S. Senate in 2022, we got a couple people on the line right now who might be interested in talking to you. Our number, 816-235-2888 for your questions and comments, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR. Up to date. You know, Vicky Hyatt, again, chairwoman of the Kansas Democratic Party, not to rub salt in the wound anymore, but I can't help but note that Barbara Bollier, in her race for the U.S. Senate this year, she raised more than $24 million. She set all kinds of fundraising records. She outraised her opponent by 4 or 5 to 1. How do you account for that? That was an incredible showing in terms of money raised. Why didn't it translate?
Usually they say that, yeah, whoever raises the most is the winner.
Right.
But I think the circumstances were just so challenging. one of the things we know, I think, just in basic politics, is you really have to have some in-person meetings with your voters. That those door-to-door canvassing kinds of things are really valuable, and we just weren't able. All of the money really went to media and a lot of digital means to reach out to voters through phone banking and texting.
Yeah, Vicki, help me with that, because there was some criticism after the election that you guys hadn't gone door-to-door, and this might have also applied to the Missouri side, and Republicans did, even though there was a virus out there. In hindsight, was that a mistake?
You know, it was a mistake in terms of, I think, that that's what you have to do to win voters over, but I don't believe it was a mistake. I would do it over again, because as a leader of the party, I did not want to be responsible for forcing people into situations that could make them very ill or even cause them to lose their life. So I think it was the right decision, and we certainly, that was what our governor was saying what we needed to do, was stay out of, to limit any in-person contact. So I would not have felt right sending canvassers out. Now, we didn't tell candidates they couldn't. If a candidate wanted to take it on and do it themselves, but when we set up our coordinated campaign, we just didn't put the piece in to have a large field organization with field offices and canvassers.
Gene, you guys faced the same criticism in Missouri. Was that a mistake, not going door-to-door in the Missouri side?
No, it wasn't a mistake. It's a pandemic, Steve. It's a real serious pandemic. And as Vicki said, I would do the same thing again. As a individual who was also on the ballot as a candidate, I worried about this as well, personally. But at the end of the day, it was my responsibility to also keep voters safe, and to keep my volunteers safe. And some things are more important, Steve, than elections. And keeping Missourians safe is more important.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Marcia from Kansas City, Missouri. Marcia, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Gene, my question is, at what point are people, specifically the Democratic Party in the state of Missouri or all over the country, going to quit using polls as a guide? We have learned our lessons many, many times. What is wrong with just pretending the person is in last place and you're giving it all you have to win the race? Why keep going back to what the polls say? What we've learned a lesson.
Gene, what about that?
You know, polls are just an indicator. That's all they are. I have not seen any candidate that is completely prone to a poll. I just, you know, all they are is an indicator. What I will tell you, though, is that indicator, when Donald Trump's on the ballot, that indicator is just wrong. It just is. We've had three election cycles now to show, even when Donald Trump's not on the ballot, but his voice is carries, there is something that's amiss about polls. That's all they are, is an indicator. And so we are not bound by polls. You know, it's important for us to kind of have an idea of where we are, so that you can pivot a little bit as to what you think, you know, you ought to do next. And I'll tell you, Clean Missouri is another example. Clean Missouri polled very well. Clean Missouri continued to pull high. And then at the ballot box, it just didn't happen. And so now we have Dirty Missouri. And I don't know how to explain that one. And I'm really, it's unfortunate the polls were wrong, but that's all. It's not as if we quit working because we were up in the polls regarding the Clean Missouri campaign.
Was it a simple, Gene, when it comes to Clean Missouri, that the ballot language was enticing enough for voters to go along with it? Because the ballot language began with the idea that, hey, we're going to limit campaign spending, you know, those kinds of ideas.
Yeah, the language certainly mattered. Certainly when it was, you know, those are decisions that are made by a Republican Secretary of State. So we were put in a bad situation on that. However, you know, when you could educate people about what it was, people, seemed to agree that this was a bad idea, and that we needed to support that original ballot initiative. So again, the polls were wrong, but even though the polls were wrong and we did not rest on our laurels regarding Clean Missouri, there was a continued fight and campaign to see that get across the finish line. Just didn't work.
Do you expect Clean Missouri to try it again?
Yeah. I do. It's just, that's so serious, right? It's all, the pieces to that ballot initiative are just too serious not to take a look at. And I'll also tell you, I think that we'll see an initiative regarding early voting. We have to do something in the state of Missouri that eases individuals' opportunity to vote. And I think it's imperative for all of us that we find success in that realm, and that, my gosh, should be a bipartisan initiative. If it's not, something's really wrong.
So you anticipate voter initiatives then, both for early voting and for Clean Missouri again?
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Yes, I sure hope so. It's just good government.
Barry from Lawrence. Barry, you're on Up to Date.
We did really well in Lawrence for the Democratic ticket, but it seems to me that the election was lost by the incredibly large margins in the exurban and rural parts of the state.
Right.
Where no matter how well Johnson, Wyandotte, Douglas counties could do, there's like no way of overcoming, 80-90% for Trump in some of these rural counties. So I'm wondering if there are any ideas of how we can engage there better and cut some of these margins, even if it was down to the mid-60s, that would, give the urban areas an opportunity to overcome margins like that. But
right.
When it's in the 80s or 90s, no way.
Vicki, how do you attract and connect with rural voters and bring them, at least some of them, back into the fold?
Well, it's always a matter of building our infrastructure, and we will continue to. We still don't have county parties in all 105 counties, and we're certainly targeting that for this next year. And one of the things that we're also doing is recruiting, building the bench, as Gene mentioned. And we'll be recruiting candidates for local city councils, boards, board of educations, and county positions. So that helps us. That gives us a closer getting into what's going on locally. So we'll be targeting that quite a bit. But it kind of takes a year-round field organization to be constantly talking to voters and registering new voters, and that still takes a lot of extra cash to keep people out and organizing, but that's something that we'll be looking at too, certainly to fundraise toward that event. And we are doing some things and have gotten some grant money from the DNC to organize in Southwest Kansas. So a lot of outreach to other communities, particularly Hispanic communities. But there's a lot of work to be done, but I think we're still moving in the correct direction. There were losses, but we're still seeing an increased number of Democrats registering in Kansas, and the numbers are going up.
So, well, Vicki, you might want to listen to our next segment. We're going to talk to an activist out in liberal Kansas in the far southwestern corner of the state about trying to organize there. So what's the consequence, Vicki, of the inability to even stifle supermajorities in the Kansas legislature? What does that mean for the different issues going forward in the next year? I'm thinking about Medicaid expansion, redistricting. Translate all that to us. For us here.
Sure. Medicaid expansion will still be a topic that is going to be foremost in the discussion, but we still know that between 60 and 70% of Kansans support Medicaid expansion. So at some point in time, some of those Republicans are going to have to come over and I think go ahead and yield to that. It's just necessary, especially during COVID-19. People are hurting a lot, so... and then the redistricting is a big issue. We, Kansans deserve fair electoral maps. And we know from the former Senate President, Susan Weigel, that they specifically were targeting keeping that supermajority for redistricting. And I think even made the comment that they wanted to see about getting getting our sole Democratic congresswoman out. So we'll fight very hard for the redistricting, and I hope that they'll certainly support a nonpartisan redistricting commission mm-hmm. like the governor has proposed.
Jean Peters-Baker, on the Missouri side, a similar question here. Do you anticipate that Republicans will go after someone like Congressman Emanuel Cleaver and try to carve up that 5th district because of the supermajorities Republicans maintained coming out of this last election?
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. And I'm really grateful that we have such a strong individual, you know, in Emanuel Cleaver to serve in that seat. So, you know, he has so much appeal, not just to Democrats, by the way, but, you know, but to moderates, you know, people that are in the proverbial middle, you know, in Missouri. So I think he'll be fine wherever he is, but there will be an attack on that seat for sure.
What about funding for education in response to the coronavirus in Missouri, Jean?
Oh, well, you know, this is one of those areas where, you know, I do feel the disappointment of the election, right, is what happens to education in Missouri. So I don't have a grand outlook. Mm-hmm. I can't be too positive on that one, given, you know, how the voters cast their ballots at the election box. We are, I think we're going to be in trouble in Missouri in that particular front.
Okay, we're going to leave our conversation there. I want to thank our two Democratic chairs for taking time to join us here. That was the voice of Jean Peters-Baker, chairwoman of the Missouri Democratic Party. We were also joined by Vicky Hyatt, chair of the Kansas Democratic Party. Thank you both for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
After a short break, we'll come back and visit with Kathleen Alonso, who's trying to organize in the far southwestern city of Liberal, Kansas, and what a challenge she faces. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3.